to Chatterbox with me, Mel Biggs. This month I am joined by the wonderful Anne Neopold from Belgium. She's a diatonic accordion player with feet in the worlds of jazz, classical and folk music. And this month we talk a lot about how labelling musicians can be a real help, but also a hindrance in terms of establishing yourself as an artist in the world of music. I first met Anne back at Halsey Manor in 2018 at a ensemble music weekend with Paul James, and later I joined her very first Advanced Melodeon Week, where I got to study about improvisation with lots of my friends here, and it's really opened so many incredible doors for me since. She recently led a melanar over on my Patreon. She taught a tune that she'd written, a Costa Quat, or a Costa Wat, as she called it. It really encompassed many things that she represents as a musician, taking influences from the traditional world as well as the jazz and improvised music world. I am very, very grateful that she's joined me today. We are running quite long, so I'm not going to take up any more time. We're going to dive straight into it, and I really hope you enjoy this interview with Anne Neopold. Welcome, Anne. Thank you so much for joining me. I want to start by kind of asking you about where you began. I know that you were born in Germany and your family are from Germany, but I don't know anything more than that. And you now teach in Belgium. It's where you live with your family. And yeah, I'd just love to know how you started out as a musician and where that kind of influence, you know, the background of your family and that kind of thing.
When I started playing the box, I already lived in Belgium, but indeed I was born in Germany from German parents. There has always been music somehow in my life because my father was doing as a hobby, really, traditional music. He played the hurdy-gurdy, bagpipes and stuff. So I remember as a kid, they took me with them to folk festivals and dance weekends or stuff. Not every week, it's not like 24-24 music influence something, but somehow it was always present. And we lived in Germany. I moved a lot due to my father's job. And as a kid, I played a little bit the classic piano at the British School of Music, see? So there it was. When we moved here, I continued, but it was never really my thing. You know, after a few years, 10 or so, I never wanted to study. I asked to play something else. I didn't like really the tunes. I'm not sure, it's not only I didn't want to study. So somebody had said the word jazz. So I asked my teacher that I would like to play jazz, but I had no clue about what it was, and she had no clue neither. So yeah, unfortunately, it was a teacher not really following the, you know, we can talk about that later, but as a teacher, it's well, nice when a kid says, I would like to do this, even if it's not the usual thing you do. I try everything to make that kid play that, to, motivate and stuff.
100%, like you've got to be, even if it's not your skill set, you've got to kind of like think outside the box in that sense.
Yeah, or you find another teacher. I mean, you say, I cannot go there, you know, what people do or what I would do. But anyway, so I met the box by chance because we were at the, a workshop weekend in Germany, where my father always went once a year. And I had been there before, and I really remember as a very small kid, like 4 or 5, I remember this thing that in the evening, everybody coming with some suitcases and backpacks and taking things out in its instruments and just playing together a jam session, really, which I didn't know by that back then what it was. And I liked that, and I with other kids there, we played under the tables, making secret ways and parkours and everything. I really like it. This and I listening to the music, from far, you know, not really interested, but it was part of the thing. Sometimes trying to dance. So anywhere I had been there before, I tried once the hurdy-gurdy because my father played it, and but I really hated the idea of it was tuning, but also the idea of this continuous sound. Back then already, it was my thing to drone. I loved the ambiance, the people, and they had also a swimming pool. So I wanted to go there, and my father said, but look, now you're, I don't know what it was, 13 or 12, 13. So now if you want to go to this workshop, you cannot just hang around and do something. So you have also to choose an instrument. And there were only two possibilities of instruments you could hire for a weekend to try, and one of those was the box. Well, the hurdy-gurdy too, but I have tried that. So so I said, okay, make it the box then. I mean, it was really out of that kind of
it was reaction. Kind of like a okay,
yeah, okay, then I want to go swimming and to have fun with my friends here. So it was funny, and that workshop, I remember very well. People were playing this tune in the advanced group called En Avant Blonde. It's very well known French waltz, A minor stuff, everybody playing it. And for me, it was the most beautiful tune in the world, the thing I loved the most, and I really wanted to play that. But being in the beginners group, with a kind of very well organized lady. It was forbidden to play that tune because I had to play some push-pull stuff. And La Bande Blonde was on crossing roads, and that was really bad for her. I mean, she said I wasn't allowed to do that. So in the evening, whilst everybody was dancing, I went to the classrooms because I had no box. I had this hired box, but I had to give it back in the evening. So one evening, I went downstairs there and I stole the key. I looked at all those boxes, and I choose one. Like, oh, I'm just borrowing you. And the people had left the scores of En Avant Blanc with the thing. And so I tried to figure out how the tune was, and I spent the whole evening trying to learn it. And yeah, it was really cool. So the next morning I was very proud, and I told the teacher, but I can play En Avant Blanc, can I? There's one thing, could you show me? Because And so she was very, very angry at me that I.
Again, like with the music tuition attitude there, it's like that you've had two reasonably negative experiences, like just from trying to do something new, like.
Yeah, it wasn't the best, but it was what it was. And then we went back home, but I didn't. So I loved that tune. It was a nice weekend, but I didn't really ask to play the box then. I mean, it was nice, but yeah, voila, that's it. And the following year, I did some babysit, and one of the families, they had a box. It was a three row, something really weird between Austrian and I don't know what. So I started to play on it and to try stuff. And later, yeah, one day I met here in Brussels. We were living in Brussels back then. There was a concert of Bruno Lautron and Didier Lallois playing as a duo. And they played, I remember, in this theater. They played really 5 evenings every evening. And we went, I think, day two, and I loved it so much. So we went back every evening, and I all recorded it on a cassette, which I still have. And that was really a fantastic experience for me, and I really wanted to do that. It was the music, as the music with all the string and the stuff, but it was also, yeah, their way of being and talking to the people and not being this like classical concert and everybody thing like this. So I really loved it, and then I really wanted to learn it, and I took some teaching with Didier Lallois back then for a year or so, and then I started doing all my stuff. So first of all, he had already too much to do, so I started as being his replacer for a few of his projects. So I was 14 or something like that, and then yeah, doing my own groups and meeting later on in France, Stéphane Guiret, Norbert Pignol, people I had heard from those groups, of course, and I liked the music, but never went to workshops. So I went there twice, improvising, meeting all this kind of stuff, and yeah, so little by little, I think I found my way through
Yeah.
what I would like to do.
Amazing. So just to kind of retrace some steps a second. So the festival that you went to, was it and the workshops, was it a Balfolk festival with workshops on the side? Like I'm just trying to think where your background or so your introduction was through the Balfolk scene, because I know that you do
Indeed.
still play a little bit, and obviously with Andy now.
Yeah, back then he did concert things, and me too. I wanted to do my concert thing, so I knew the Balfolk thing, but yeah, playing for a dance was not my principal thing. But doing a few workshops, I met other students. We made our first group, and out of this, I made other groups. So I think it was really quite fast, yeah. I said 1 year of teaching, and then okay, that stops, and I had to do my own stuff. And there was no other teacher or no other way, so I made my own group, and we went to find gigs. When I think about it today, it's a bit crazy. I mean, I was 14, doing those replacements jobs, but also doing my first gigs, and I even don't really remember how we found them or how people called us up to play. But it's really crazy. My parents saying, "Okay, good," yeah, me saying, "Yeah," and going to France to play a concert this weekend with a friend of mine who was, I don't know, 6 years older. She just had her driving license,
Yeah.
and us two in this car. So yeah, it was really funny times.
So how did you get into jazz? What was your route into that? Or was it just a natural process? You obviously had the passion from a young age with a piano, but when did it actually begin for you that you went that route?
Well, I think it was really meeting Stéphane and Norbert, Stéphane Miret and Norbert Pignol, who did, it's not, they're not jazz musicians in that way. Well, it's also good, we can talk about it later. What is the definition of a jazz musician? But there are several definitions, I think, but I kind of have mine. But their workshops were, there was a box workshop, which I did, and it was really high level back then, so I was very happy to do that. And then I did their improvisation week, so they have a week on really improvised music. And it's through that, I think, I listened already to Yeah, French jazz musicians and stuff, but not so much. It wasn't, oh, well, that's my thing. But at that workshop, we did free improvisations, improvising on chords, and it was just another way of, meeting, playing, being aware of sound, texture, stuff. So it's a bit through that way that it started. And I had always been improvising, actually, with my groups. We always made like, and then it's the bridge, and you play that chord, and I will just make up something. So it was already there somewhere. So I think there was already the idea of doing it then through those workshops. And later on, well, yeah, I wanted to study something, so I just wanted to study music then once I was decided to do that. And with the box, you don't really have, I mean, you have now a little bit more places where you could study, but back in time there was nothing, and you had only the Conservatoire Royal, and so the Royal Conservatory Music Superiors to make a master, become master in music diploma. And yeah, you had that in a few places in France, and I was wondering how will I enter those with the box. And the classic music back then was really not my thing. I think no connection at all. And everybody said, yeah, you have to go with the jazz people because they're really cooler than the classical system. So I went there and
You're definitely like on the cooler end of the musician scale, so.
yeah, well, it was in the idea of they will never let you in at the classical thing anyway. The jazz people are more open-minded, so just go there and it will be fine. Speaking of open-minded, it was not the best neither. So you have to do an entrance exam, and it was all difficult. Basically, to resume the situation at the end of those 2 or 3 days of test, the headmaster of the school back then came to see me and told me, yeah, it's of the section, jazz section, told me, yeah, unfortunately they wouldn't take me because to enter I would have to play a real music instrument.
Let's talk about that, because one of the questions from my lovely Patreon crowd is, while most European diatonic accordion players I've heard have gone the folk or bal folk route, what influenced you to move strongly in the direction of jazz? But it was because you played it anyway, right? And it's because of what you wanted to do with it, I'm
I don't
assuming.
know if I really played jazz, I was just interested in the improvised music. And so if you say, okay, I want to study something and I want to, to learn something about improvising, I think indeed jazz is a very strong thing to do so. I really must say it was not really a choice. It was out of, what should I do? That won't work, huh? And so this jazz school, indeed, so they told me it's not an instrument, but so I went in for composing. So the master is called jazz composing and arranging, because they told me that if I wanted to do something, I could do that, because then there's no instrument needed. The only thing I wanted to do was play. So it was the beginning of a long and hard thing, and it was really the time of me being unhappy there and having to write and no time to play, but then in the weekends go and play my gigs and play some bals and meet people there. And it was the time of being at the bal, being told, ah, no, you play, there's too much syncopation, you're not really a folk musician, you're doing your jazz, right? And then over the week at school being told, ah, you've done a gig again, but yeah, you're a folky, you're not really a jazz musician. So and I think, Ali, today I can say, maybe both of them were right, but it's not really a way of doing. So it was a very uncomfortable situation, which still can be like that today, I think. Well, the good days, it's very rich and very nice to be between different worlds and trying to do the best of everything and doing just what I want to do, being special. I don't know how you call it, but the way of. What are you doing, jazz or folk? Well, let me think. So it's really cool, the good days, it's really cool to be not in one drawer, let's say. But there are some days where it can be really tough because it's, 2024, we're in a world of, okay, you
It's
post on
boxes, isn't
this
it?
page, on this page,
Yeah.
you have a CD label, but which label? Because everybody needs to everything needs to be labeled. It's
Yeah,
really
you
a
need
bit
to have a
sad,
genre
but
title and be categorized for Spotify and all of that stuff, you know that.
So I guess I'm doing a kind of resistant not to be categorized. Trying to No, not trying to, it's like it's just like,
It's just
well,
how it is, yeah. I mean, it seems like that kind of test of character, you come across to me like such a confident person who really knows themselves, which is like I feel in a way I've got a long way, but I'm still searching for that grasp of who I am and what I'm putting out there. But it seems like there has been that vein of vulnerability for you as people have told you, you don't fit in this box. So obviously as a young person growing up in that way, yeah, how did you find your strength in that?
But I guess, you know, it's a very dangerous thing to say because it has been used and misused in a sense, but what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I'm sorry about that. By fighting, I guess you find your own way of what suits you, or you know also better which fights you want to fight and which are not worth it. So yeah, it's by doing it, and it's a bit, we say in French, la boucle qui boucle la boucle, the circle circling itself. It's like, no, you mentioned before. So yeah, I did my debut things in the traditional world, doing folk stuff, folk projects, and then going really away from that. I played with this duo, Deux Accordéons, for long years. We did our own repertoire. I did the composing, basically. And I think, yeah, it went really some strange ways. And then, okay, more and more jazz. I have those projects like Musette is Not Dead, or now playing with the string quartet, more into classical music. And no folk, and a folk ball. I mean, some years ago, I remember I wanted to play in France, and there were a lot of contacts. People contacted me. Do you want to play? It's for a ball. I said, but I'm sorry, I don't play for dance, it's just not what I do. Yeah, but if you want to play, but yeah. And so it really went up to, you should make up a dance program so you can play. And so, for instance, that's something I've never done because I wasn't feeling like it. And now, as you said, I have this duo with Andy Ketting, and indeed we have this, we decided we'd do something and trying, and we have this concert program, but very soon it became quite logic, we would play for a dance and for a ball. So it's not a principle. I don't, because I know that sometimes people say I don't like traditional music, and I don't know, I've heard already a lot of things about what I apparently said, but I've never said that. So it's not that I don't like, so I think they're, yeah, everything at its time, and for now it's really cool to have this do where we do both. And I must say, the last months, yeah, we've played several balls, and I really like it, and it's cool and good to be back in that kind of, yeah, world, which changed too. Huh? I mean, we're getting older, and by the 2000s, it's in 2020, 2024, it's not the same thing anymore at all.
No, so the younger scene are coming in and having opinions and changing speeds and changing styles, and all sorts of other influences are starting to come in anyway. So
yeah.
But talking about Andy, like, can you tell us a bit more about where you both met, how long you go back, and how the duo came about, and again, how you work together. But, you know, I've seen it beautifully described as the melodiste and the improviseur. Excuse my French, but I just think that's a lovely way of describing you both. But it works so wonderfully well together. So, yeah, how did it happen?
When I was a teenager, in my first years, I did a workshop with him here in Belgium. And it's a workshop I had to do. So I didn't want to do it. They made me go there, and I was like, if you want help to buy a 3-row box, it was something like that.
Oh, and you had to go meet Andy Cutting.
Yeah, something like that.
Future Melda stepping in here to say that there's been a section edited out of this free public podcast, and it is available on the extended episode, which is available via my Patreon. If you want to hear the full version where Anne goes into a lot more detail about her duo with Andy Cutting, you can go and sign up to my Patreon to hear that. Thanks for listening, and now back to the interview.
We've been a bit slowed down by Corona, Brexit.
It really got in the
stuff.
Way. It was just as you were kind of like heading off, really, wasn't it? And
yeah, we were about to start, and then it took some time. So our CD, which is out from March last year, which is kind of new, but for us it doesn't seem so new anymore because we had been talking for it about
sure. It's so been recorded time. For so long. And you've just launched your new website, haven't you? Nepalcutting.eu.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
I'll leave a link to that, guys, down below. So do check that out for gigs across Europe and the UK. And are you going any further?
Well, we're going to Canada this summer to the Carrefour Mondial de l'Accordéon in Montmagny.
So amazing.
Canada, which is really cool. Yeah, amazing place. I've been there before, Andy too has, I think, years ago. So it's really a nice place, very weird place, and it's really a planet accordion, very weird thing. So really cool and upcoming. Yeah, a lot of things happening this summer, ideas for the future. We'll be in Portugal next month, so end of March. So yeah, it's, I think it's really nice to have this project, which is not, yeah, it's not a project like we do this now for 1 year and we sell a gig. I think it's really something to construct and to develop.
Yeah.
As you said before, yeah, the Melodist and Improviser, it's we're playing next Saturday, this new program, Les Coeurs Tendres, Tender Hearts, somehow it's called. It's a program more based onto classical or ancient music. Because, yeah, we had this tune, Dowland tune, which we worked on, works very nicely. So we thought, maybe we could find some other stuff in that direction. And then there was this festival asking if we would do something. So, you know, it's nice to try new stuff and new music. And, yeah.
That sounds really exciting. Hopefully that project might, well, you know, you might have other iterations of that, perhaps, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's nice to have. I think personally, me, I need different things.
Are you always coming up with stuff? You know, you said already you like to always be doing new projects, new kind of, and new ideas will come from that. That kind of living on the edge, almost. It sounds like to me, who's somebody who quite likes routine and doing the same thing. But I love the energy that you come at stuff with. But does that translate into your music writing? Are you always kind of thinking up ideas and recording into your phone? And
I don't really record into my phone. Yeah, I write down stuff. Yeah, well, I have a book. It's a stupid book like this, like a Moleskine book. You know,
yeah,
kind of. I mean, it's not. It's like only for music. I have a book a year or something like that. And when sometimes I hear by chance something nice on the radio, a pop tune, or it can be anything, or a cover of I don't know what, or electronic or classic or jazz. And so and I want to look that up. And sometimes, yeah. On the edge is maybe the good word. It's by looking up something which I don't know and falling on something completely else, but say, yeah, that's even better. And it's not that I work out one idea until the end. It's like a growing brainstorming stuff. And sometimes when I have some pieces fitting together, I work them out. I think for the compositions, most of the time it's small parts and bits or some bars which I have in my head or which I write down, but then to work them out, as a composition, I'm even not talking about an arrangement, but just to composition, it takes me much more time. I really work on the thing and I develop it and I come back to it. And sometimes it stays like it for some years, and sometimes it goes quite fast. So in week time, I can, if I find the time, I can try to work on it every day and to develop that. So, yeah.
The bands that you work with, do you tend to arrange collaboratively, or are you going to them? I suppose it depends on the band, but if it's your band, are you arranging and do you arrange there in person, or do you come with an idea and it's scored out? How does that work for you?
Well, the things I'm doing the last year, so I have my trio with bass and drums, which I played quite a lot with, and which is I do everything, as you say. So I come up with the tunes and the ideas, but the arrangements, yeah, I would say basically I have the idea, but then we try stuff and we decide. But it's quite free, so I mean, it's a trio, according to you, so I'm the one doing most of the stuff. So I know when there's some double bass lines or so, I wrote things out, but that's more with the three of us in rehearsal, saying, should we do it twice? No, maybe second time. Yeah, so that's more like together. The other projects I've done these last years are really written music. So there has been Music Is Not Dead, which is really with four. You can check it out on the internet. There are some videos. You have a really hobo, flute, trumpet, trombone, and rhythm section. So it's really every note is written. So it took me really months and months of writing out every voicing and everything. Same for my project with the string quartet, and I really write down every note, every bow direction.
Have you worked with strings in the past to know how to do that, or is that just something that you've seen and you can kind of feel viscerally? Or I don't know, how does that work for you?
No,
to know
I'm
that?
Not sure you can. I'm not sure one can feel that naturally, or otherwise it's very talented. But I studied the jazz composition arranging thing, so there was part of the studies to get this master. You have parts of the courses with the classical department.
Okay.
So I did instrumentation, I did orchestration, I had to learn by heart the harp pedals, and the exam, for instance, was that you get a score and you have to put the pedal signals to know where they have to. Yeah, so
wow.
Not always very useful, but I mean, yeah, it's a good study, or you know, to make reduction, or you get an orchestra. scoring, you have to make the piano reduction, or the opposite, you get the piano score, you have to orchestrate it. So yeah, it wasn't great fun for me. It was really tough, but you learn a lot of stuff. So for the strings, for instance, yeah, as they say, that string quartet is one of the worst things, and most people want the worst things to write for. And it's really tricky. It's a really tricky thing. So I must say, yeah, for that program, the first program we did, really, yeah, it took me, I think, 9 months to write all this hour of music, and now I'm on the new one. So yeah, it's really cool too to play in something you've written, you know?
And
And
hear it.
it seems, I mean, if people don't know me, it seems now very okay, everything is written, but it's not. I mean, there are some free parts in it because I'm still an improviser, I like today. But for instance, if there is in a tune, there is a part of improvisation in the middle on chords, well, the backing of this improvisation would be written out for them, and me having this or this amount of time to improvise it. So it's written out, but with free things written out. So it's really freedom in the frame of, yeah.
In the frame of what you've created. Going back to Musette Is Not Dead, would you just, in your own words, tell us a bit about that project and what Musette is in itself?
Well, Musette is Ali, what we know as French music between World War I and II, and this kind of, well, in my opinion, what I always saw is this very kitsch thing. People think a lot of Yvette Orner, which people know, you know, this lady with the curled orange hair like this. Yeah, there were different moments in Musette, and also we think, yeah, it's very, very French, but actually, so yeah, it's born in France, but it's this music made out of a meeting from different cultures, from different. In Paris, you had people from the Auvergne playing Auvergnat music, and with the cabaret and everything. You had, but also we had swing musicians coming up. Well, I'm doing a very quick resume, but it's a bit the melting pot of all those musics together. So yeah, it has become a French music, but it's very funny to think of it as French because it's the result of a melting pot of a meeting of different musical cultures. The Italian guys were there, you had jazz swing musicians, you had the more traditional ones not swinging. So it's like, what is it, Beatles or Rolling Stones, right? I mean, it was a bit the same thing. You had some Musette balls where there was really written on it, no talking, because in some of the swing things you were supposed to dance in silence to be really with the music. In others, it was the big fiesta things where you had really different worlds. You had those bagpipe cabarets, which were then excluded from some bars. You had some places where the accordion was not allowed because they were making too much noise. And basically, yeah, it was a very bad guys milieu in Paris where you had these different dancing places. And this music, yeah, developed. There is a lot of it. You know, it's like jazz tune. What is a jazz tune? I mean, you have so many different kinds of. And I think in the Musette we have. Indeed, there is an incredible world of compositions of tunes existing, and you have, people who are familiar with jazz will know the Real Book, which is like really those books with the jazz standards in it, which you can find nowadays. You can find it on the internet. Well, for the Musette, you have actually a bit the same. You have really thousands and thousands of those books with the tunes, which all have the same structure. They all have two parts and then a trio part, which is, it's really funny. It's all the same, but not the same at all. And then, yeah, I think the misery of the Musette is that starting with the electronic music, or most people, keyboard stuff for the dancings, because that was the dancing back then. I mean, the dancing people go to now, not the Morris dance and not the Bal Folk, obviously. I'm talking about discotheque, yeah, going to dance to the techno. I mean, it was the musicians were thrown away by the arrival of those more electronic instruments, and I think that's a bit it was a bit the point of no return. For the idea of Musette being super kitsch and super popular, only it's because it was a bit misused. There have been great names from the Musette, like Azzola, Jo Priva, Gus Wieser, very well-known Belgian player. Those were incredible musicians, super good, well-trained, well, also quite close to the jazz somehow for some of them. So I think, yeah, Musette is a word, but there are different kinds of Musette. And I think today, at least certainly today in France, what people remember, or when you go on the street and you ask somebody what is Musette, people will yeah, most commonly start to laugh or say, oh no, not that. It's because they think only about this last bit of Musette. And so yeah, Musette Is Not Dead, mine, is more the punk version of it, as I like to say. Not true, but we came to the name, like, jazz is not dead, it just smells funny. So it's a bit, that's where the musette is not dead comes from. Yeah, I had this big event, a festival here in Belgium back in 2012 or 13, don't know so much, and carte blanche, I could do whatever for the whole evening, and I had invited some saxophone, trumpet, trombone, and I rearranged two or three musette tunes, which, because in my opinion, it was very funny to do that for that special occasion. And it was really great evening. And then a few months later, I had the big chance to go on, to be received at the master level of Richard Galliano, very French, very well-known French accordion player. I mean, one of the biggest. He had played with Nougaro, with Barbara. He's really the master of. Yeah, and it's funny, in England, people don't know it so much, but yeah, really, the rest of you, Richard Galliano is really, yeah, it's kind of a god to me. So I went at his masterclass. It was a fantastic experience. And well, in the evening, you have the chance to be together, to talk to God. And he said, "Ah, and you, when you festival, what do you do?" And so I said, "Yeah, a few weeks ago I did this thing at the festival. But, yeah, let me listen to it." And so I showed him three of those tunes who had been recorded through the mixing table, and he said, "This is really fantastic. You have to do that. That's really something you should do." Because, yeah, talking about influences, he's really, I think, if I have, didn't really have a master, I mean, we said so, I did some teaching with one or the other, but I don't consider that I had one Galliano. If there would be one, it would be him, because he really, yeah, he saw, I think, this idea. He said, "Ah," because it was a workshop for accordions, no boxes. So, and I was there by chance, and he said, "Ah, look, you all have those accordions of 55 kilos, and this small thing you have to push and pull." Yeah, because you have to imagine. So we had the matinee, he gave a score from Scarlatti or Bach, and you had the matinee to go and study in your apartment, and then at noon you had to meet like a master class and a classical, and one has to play and everybody's around. So the others came back and played those three or four pages, and I came back and I had worked out three bars, because, well,
Yeah,
the
push
push and
pull.
the pull and finding solutions, and I was like, "Oh my God," it was kind of stressful. But so he said, "Ah, look at her." Well, it sounds a bit old dramatic, but it was really that. He said, "Ah, look at her. This is, yeah, you good, you play very well." It was a bit funny, but he liked the way, doing more with less or less with more. I don't know which way around, finally. And so he really gave me that kind of confidence. Oh, confidence, I don't know. But the way of saying, "You should do that." Because it was the years where I was thinking, should I stop and start the chromatic accordion? To do other, it was a weird question. He said, no, you," and he said, "This musette is not dead yet." It wasn't named like that back then. That's so cool. And so the day afterwards, it was in the area where he lives in south of France, he came back with a lot of books and boxes with scores of musette tunes he had from his father, because he and so that's how Musette is Not Dead was born, because I came home and I tried to, yeah, the months after, to work that out and to make it happen. So yeah, we recorded the album to 2016, and yeah.
I'm so pleased to hear that you had somebody that you looked up to and that was essentially a mentor or a teacher at that particular moment in your career, who actually supported you playing diatonic and like really
Yeah.
just took inspiration from you but gave you so much more in return. That's amazing, considering you've told us about some like really difficult times that just weren't that great.
Yeah, indeed.
It's been said before about, or maybe it was yourself who told us at Halsey how you've had this attitude, this why doesn't she play chromatic? Like she'd have all the notes, it'd be so much easier. But it's just so missing the point, isn't it? It's like the instrument you've chosen is that, and it's your tool to do with what you want.
Yeah, I think so. People still saying, I mean, it's less now, but it has been some time, but you're never safe of this kind of comment. But people saying, yeah, but anyway, you don't really play the diatonic. I mean, first, the accordion diatonic, this isn't diatonic anymore, And I'm like, what is it? Because of it being chromatic music. But I think what I do, or what makes my music, my tunes, is very often the fact that I push-pull. I play mostly crossing rows, yes, but when do I change my push-to-pull or the opposite? It's not just because I need some air. There is always a good rhythmical reason or everything. And I think my music on chromatic accordion wouldn't be my music for sure. So I really think people saying, yeah, but that's not diatonic anymore, and you should. Yeah, I'm tired of that, but I think I'm old enough now to, because it bothered me for a long time. It made me really so angry, all those stupid comments. But and now I think, yeah, okay, good for them. But I really think, yeah, it's wrong. I'm out of my position. I really think that I use the diatonic accordion. I make use of the specificities, how you say it, because it, yeah, you the thing that there is one bass you leave, and when you change directions, it makes this rhythmic effect. You can also reproduce that on an accordion, but it's not the best. And you can do other stuff on accordions which are really great, which we can try to do imitate, but it's not the same neither. So it's not that one is better or one is less good, but I think it's,
I
yeah.
kind of almost find that the diatonic system forces you to find solutions that you wouldn't necessarily find if you had all the options open to you. It's that it's a
Yeah.
nice way to have problems to solve and then creatively solve them. It's
Yes.
musically interesting. As well as all of the musical projects that you've got going that take you all over, you also have a lot of teaching projects that I'd love to talk to you a bit more about, and the academies that you teach in, and kind of how that works and how that fits in. I'm really interested as part of this podcast series to talk about each other's approaches to teaching and kind of how you started teaching, and also what the academy system is like in Europe, because we don't really have an equivalent here. Is it for students that are young and growing up, or is it for older people who are maybe retired and want a project on the side? Like, how does it kind of work, and how does it fit in with your life?
In Belgium, because you're talking all over Europe, I'm really not sure this academy thing, what we call here academie of academie in Flemish, is really a Belgian thing. You don't have that in the Netherlands, neither in Germany, neither in France. You have other things of teaching, of course, but this academy is really something special because, so in Belgium, every town has his own academy. Some, yeah, most of them twice, because one in French and one of the Flemish. We have everything double, but that's another podcast, I think, or two or three. So it's basically music schools open to everybody, and it's official schools which with money from the government, so it makes that you can subscribe to the lessons there for not much money, which is really cool, right? And it's open for kids and grown-ups and everybody, actually. So it starts, there's also big changes happening in there, but yeah, let's say from like when you enter primary school, you can also enter that music school, and you have to follow, it's a complete course, so you have to follow music theory and instrument. Usually you start only with the music theory for 1 year or two before being allowed to touch an instrument, which is, yeah, stupidity number one in my opinion. But anyway, things are changing. And then, as you say, yeah, when you don't walk anymore, no, it's really open for everybody. So from 7 to 99, you can go there. You have to follow, yeah, there are certain rules, but, and it's really cool because, yeah, I don't know many places, you know, I don't know. Okay, but in Germany or in France, you have those associations, you have workshops, you have sometimes people meet for something once a week, but this is a really official thing. So making that the teachers too are people who have a diploma, which is cool somehow. But so now, yeah, here we are. That's the big discussion. Is this a good thing or a bad thing for the box or for everybody? Or for, you know, as I said, when I started there, the box wasn't, the traditional music wasn't present in those educational structures. Now it is. Now we go over also to the teaching. I have a teaching job now at Lucca, which is superior school, like university level. I think people know well by now about those Scandinavian, what is it, Nordic master things. So there's the idea in many music school and conservatories to integrate traditional music, but I think it's, yeah, there are some dangerous issues, or it's always a bit like finding the good thing, because of course box in an academy, okay, but so you have to fit to the system, so you have to, people also have to do music theory and everything, which is not the bad thing, but I think sometimes you forget that 80%, I have no clue, actually, of the music world, I mean, go to India, go everywhere, they are not learning by doing na 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 na. No, they listen, it's learning by ear, it's having a fantastic ear training, seeing, singing, doing, and all that is music theory too, somehow. So I think by trying to squeeze in something new, like traditional music, in a very ancient system established, like for classic music, you have some conflicts and problems. And yeah, if I go back to our discussion, me starting at the jazz conservatorium, people saying, yeah, you will see, they are very open-minded. So, you know, it's really funny because jazz is indeed something very open-minded with an open spirit should be. But the years I came there, it was the beginning of the jazz years in those schools, and they were doing like because they were also feeling uncomfortable about what is jazz. So I think it's, yeah, all those systems, it has super good sides and yeah.
So do you find, are you fighting the system, for want of a better phrase, to try and implement more by ear training, more folk training, for, you know, want of a better way of saying it? Is that something that you're advocating for in your teaching roles?
Yeah, fighting. I don't know. I don't like the fighting aspect. When I began, you know, it was very uncommon, but there was this head of school back then who really wanted me to be there, and he liked open ideas and folk music, so I was a bit free to do what I could do. But now that's the thing, those schools are governmental schools, so they get money from there, so there is a control, there is a supervision from, and those, it's not, the problem is not the school itself, so in the structure, it's not between me and up there, it's sometimes between the schools and having to fit a huge system. So I'm there as a teacher in the folk section for folk instruments, diatonic accordion, folk, and I'm not sure if I'm really a folk musician. I have my backgrounds and I of course with the beginners and playing this, we do traditional music, we do folk things, but sometimes I do a little part of classic music, we improvise. I like to
keep it
to open up. Yeah,
one of the things that I'd written down here when we were talking about setting this up and how to describe the Melanor that you're doing this evening for me on my Patreon, which, by the way guys, it will have happened by the time you're hearing this podcast, so I'll leave a link downstairs to Anne's bluesy Breton tune, Melanor, which I can't wait for. You mentioned that people struggle to describe you when you're booked to teach a workshop, and you've kind of seen all sorts of ways of kind of trying to, again, put you in a box and describe you. And it is difficult. I think I admit I struggle to do you justice in the way that I put you out there. And I think I copped out by saying she's to be experienced rather than explained. And I think that that's quite an hopefully complimentary way to describe you. But I mean, what in your own words do you feel kind of suits you and fits you? How would you describe yourself in those contexts?
Oh, you know, it's difficult. I think for the workshop context things, you know, teaching for years now and some workshops in France, like sometimes for a week, and they ask me to write down a text, and I look at all the texts written by my colleagues for their week, and I'm always surprised, but maybe I'm just too honest, but when you read those programs, I ask myself, how many weeks will they work? Yeah, we will talk about harmony and rhythm and left hand accompaniment while seeing different things of arranging and all that in 3.5 days. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. So it's just, and indeed it's always between what people expect, and maybe I'm just a bit bizarre.
In the best way.
In the best way, my thing. Thank you. I don't know, trying to. But for me, the box, it's not that it could be any other instrument. That's not true, because I really think that the box is my thing. But if I should describe it, in the teaching way, what do I want to do? It's, I think, there's not one word, but what's for sure is, yeah, the box being really an instrument and not just being, the box is this really bizarre, funny instrument of the traditional, and which is limited, and which is for dance music. So the box is the box, and it's an instrument, and what we want to do is music, what we want to make is music. So I think that resumes it quite well. It's learning how to listen, how to react, how to be... do you say autonomy? You say that to be independent in learning things. So it's in the box world, you know, this idea of now everybody pulls the first outside button. It's not my way of. It's super cool that it exists. Back in time, you had nothing. So it's very nice that there's a system to learn whilst you don't have any clue about music and everything. But I think it's nice to keep in mind, yeah, that it's an instrument in a world of instrument and sounds, and that what we want to do is, you want to play with other people, you want to share, you want to try stuff. So I think to get some independency to how can I learn myself stuff, so that's really something important to me. For a workshop or for this, yeah, I like to give an idea about my world or my planet, and I think it's not about I pick all of this up in 1 hour and yeah, I never walk like this. I give my ideas, I give my view of how I see music, how I compose it, and then I think up from there, when people are interested in one of those aspects, they can develop that with me or find somebody who's very specialized in that aspect of music.
Yeah, I met you in 2018 at the Euro Weekend, as we said, where Paul James organized that. And then I came back for the very first Advanced Melodeon Week that you were, I think you were the only tutor at that point.
Yeah.
That week at Halsey with you really gave me such an incredible impression of the teaching. Felt very structured, but at the same time, it was just about opening doors and letting us kind of unravel our own thoughts. And I think all of us were quite focused on improvisation at the time. I can remember you working with us to help us feel freer, but at the same time, giving us a few clues, rules, for want of a better word, just to kind of set a scene that we could then kind of follow and open up and explore. And that was the first time I'd ever been taught how to improvise, but also how you can just have that explorative thing. And since then, my writing has changed and my approach to the instrument in my own creative way has changed. So you really planted some seeds for me. And I've just seen that blossom with my students who have been students of yours at Halsey. And it's such a lovely thing that we have here in the UK, that you come and visit and like fertilize our like melodeon playing, because it's not something we get here to have that chameleon, I guess. That's a nice way to describe, you know, you have so many talents and so many different influences.
Yeah,
that
like
you
chameleon
bring.
Is maybe a nice thing. If I should find one word, thank you, that's maybe.
Yeah, take that. I'm borrowing that from Joe Freya, who I think has been described as a chameleon of folk music, because in a similar way, she's worked in so many different ways in different bands, and I think that is a nice way to describe somebody. So yeah, have it.
Yeah, somehow I think it's the best. Yeah, in the teaching thing, what I like is just to meet people. That's also something I'm of course we're there to teach music, but that's my idea of music, is to bring somebody from where he or she is further. And I think that's sometimes things we forget in a music school or something, or that people tend to forget that they have a program and we're supposed to do this, so this is a program, whilst what I like to do, the program doesn't matter so much. I think it's not that it's not about music, of course it is, but if it's this melody or this one or this small thing, it's not a problem. Usually I like to do very easy stuff to be able to develop that ways further, rather than taking a tune which is a bit limit too difficult and where we'll be stuck to on the fingering and the rhythm and the so in a group, that's for sure. I like to use what I get. I see those people there and okay, what are you doing, what's your thing, what do you like, and up from them we construct something together.
Do you find that you get students in front of you that are so rigidly focused on the structure or the technique, the fingering, whatever it might be, the kind of the barrier of I need to get this thing right, but they're not really focused on the whole image of it coming together, and don't worry about the mistakes, you know, just kind of like try and ignore that and actually exist in your body. How does it feel for you in your mind to do this? It's nice to talk about this in a way, because I feel that what teaching individually and in a group, but mostly individually for me, I'm trying to get to the person behind that, so that to bring them out of themselves through the instrument. And it's not about improvising or writing tunes necessarily, but just to try and free themselves from some of the rules that they might have been taught at school that might be holding them back. That feels important for me as a teacher. Do you find that that's the same for you?
Yeah, it is, definitely. When you learn music, you have so many aspects to control. I mean, your muscles and tightening the right things, and then this arm and here, and your brains. And so I think it's also sometimes a bit when people say, but smile when you play, even if it's your first tune, and just enjoy. I think it's also difficult to do so, because we tend to forget that there is so many things going up on there. But indeed, I think musical education, certainly in back a few years, it was something very rigid and something very, well, those academies we were talking about here in Belgium, that is 30 years ago, it was no fun at all. You played your exam in front of a jury. It was really very tough and very traumatizing. So the good thing in the, I think, in the folk world is a bit that there's this chilled, cool, well, in appearance. Sometimes it's also hiding other stuff, but there is this, this way where it's possible to be yourself and to play stuff and to learn in on your ease and with no pressure, and just develop what you do and who you are.
Try and find that blend of both. Certainly for me, that's kind of become my thing, you know, coming from a folk background, Morris dancing and, you know, playing for dance just in sessions really casually, and then it just sort of became an obsession, and then I just wanted to know more and just, you know, gradually follow your nose and your instincts, and you start to go to things that teach you about music theory. And realizing for me, when I learned the flute at school, a bit like your piano lessons. It's like, this really isn't for me. Why am I doing this? I don't really enjoy what I'm doing. Loved playing an ensemble, loved playing an orchestra, but like the flute wasn't for me. So when I found the melodeon, it was just that freedom. And then gradually more and more workshops, more and more thinking about things, and then more and more creativity because of those thoughts. And it's just, for me, a nice blend between the two worlds. And I'm happy with that. But it's not for everyone. Like, you don't have to have that. It's just, I think, nice when academies can see the benefit of both structure and the, you know, the more freestyle. We don't have much time left, and I just feel that there's probably so much more to be said, but I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I think it can almost be summed up in, don't put people in boxes, like literally or figuratively. Like, it's just so important that music is seen as this completely open-ended thing, but at the same time there are boxes that help us to kind of find our own route through. And in my experience of knowing the music world in all of its different forms, I can't think of anyone else who kind of does it with so much just vigor, like you say. And I'm allowed to swear, it's my podcast, but it's like you just stick to your fingers and say, well, fuck it, I'm old enough now to just own myself, and this is what I do, and this is who I am. And I think you've found your crowd.
Thank you. But trying my best to doing just myself. Not trying to do something else. I think it's better that way around.
But you impart that on the people that you teach as well, and that's really important. So thank you for doing that for me, because I can remember being very daunted at one point. I asked you for some opinions on my own compositions, which feels crazy to even say that now, because it's like, basically tell me they're amazing, which isn't really why I went to you. I did want like constructive feedback, but you just basically said, without saying it, just own your own ideas, you know, and just keep finding new ways to do things until you're satisfied with what you're doing. And I think that's the thing, really, isn't it? Is there anything that you'd like to promote here? Just a little moment to say what's coming up for you, anything in the UK or elsewhere? We do have listeners across Europe and the world, so.
So I have this, in my free time, I'm trying to learn to make websites. So I have my website, annepaul.be, where you can find all my activities. I have my YouTube channel where there is new stuff regularly. I made this website for Andy Cutting and myself, nipotcutting.eu, where you can find stuff. We will be in Belgium the next month. There is something is coming up in Belgium, I think Netherlands, Portugal. If you live in Canada, of course, there is Montmagny and some other surprises for this summer, hopefully. And next year there is indeed I come back to Halsey Manor, where it all started for me, for the UK. We'll be there for a week workshop, and there will be gigs of the duo also in the UK. It's a bit far to know where and how, but indeed there is lots of stuff coming up. So I would be very happy to meet you there. That's cool.
Super. I'm going to leave links to all of that down below in the description, guys, so do go and check that out. I just want to say thank you so much for saying yes to this. I've been a big fan of yours for since I met you. It's been a super personal, inspirational journey. When you said yes to doing this, I was like, I felt so honoured, because I really respect your professionalism and everything. I thought, whoa, I must look good that she said yes to me. So that was a real kind of big fat thumbs up for me. So, and I'm really grateful for you coming on board this evening. I'm looking forward to seeing this bluesy Breton Costa Quat. So thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, how about that? Thank you so much to Anne for joining me for that discussion. We went into all sorts of different places that I didn't know we would go, which is the fantastic thing about this podcast. If you are enjoying it as well, leave me a like, a comment, a subscribe, whatever platform you're on, or you can get in touch, chatterbox@melbigsmusic.co.uk. I'd love to hear what you're hearing and what you're enjoying. If you have enjoyed this episode, you might be interested to know that there is an extended edition available on my Patreon. This month there's quite a lot of extra information about the Andy Cutting duo and other things, so if you want to get involved with that, check out the link in the description where you can join my Patreon from as little as £4.50 a month. That will get you the Chatterbox tier with the extended episodes, or you can join on a higher tier for £12.50 a month, get the extended podcasts, but also get access to the Melanars, where Anne Hartwin and Luca have taught a Melanar, but also all of the things that I've been building on there for the last 4 years as well. There's now a wealth of learning resources there, and it will be really cool if you went and checked that out. You can sign up on a 7-day free trial, so there's absolutely no obligation to stay for any length of time. It's entirely up to you how long you stay for. This month over on my Patreon, I am so happy that my wonderful friend Andy Cutting is going to be joining me. He's actually coming here. We're going to be recording it live in the same room because he only lives up the road. So that's really, really nice. It's going to be interesting from a position of tech. So hopefully that will all go well. He is going to be running a melanar on my Patreon all about how to play with other people and what that might look like in sessions, in duos, trios, bigger bands, and how the accordion can be part of all of those scenarios. If you're interested in hearing him talk about his career and his perspectives on how to play with others, you can sign up to my Patreon via the link below. He's also going to be sitting down to record an episode of Chatterbox with me, and really we're going to be going on probably for hours because I know me and him can just natter on about stuff for ages, so that's really not going to be an episode you want to miss. If the Andy Cutting Melanar sounds interesting to you, he's going to be live on my Patreon via Zoom on the 20th of March in the evening, 7 p.m. UK time, so you can sign up, you can get the Zoom link, you can join from wherever you are in the world, or you can catch up with the recording of that melanar in your own time afterwards. Thanks very much for listening to this episode, guys. If you've enjoyed it, please leave a like and a subscribe and a comment if you can. A 5-star review on Apple would be amazing. Share it with your friends, share it wherever you think people are going to really enjoy this kind of content, and I'll see you on next month's episode. Cheers. Bye.